Good morning, and you are listening to KMEC 105.1 LPFM, Ukiah, the Mendocino Environmental Center, live and streaming on the web at www.kmecradio.org. Our studio line, as usual, is area code 707-468-9800. If you'd like to give us a call with a comment, question, or criticism, please feel free to do so at any time. If you'd like to be an underwriter for this program or any other on the KMEC lineup, please feel free to call. Area code 707-468-9801. My name is Ukiah Sativa Morrison, host of this program, Joint Venture, which will be on from now, which is 9 o'clock California time, until high noon. And I wanted to commemorate this day's program to Tom Robbins. I had him on my mind today, and I remember the first time that I read a Tom Robbins book. I was in high school, and I thought, wow, this is something that actually I can relate to. It's, reading this book reminds me of my own life, and somebody else is living it. So it was really a strange paradox to have finally met Tom Robbins years ago in Silva, North Carolina, not far from his home of Burnsville, North Carolina, where he was raised. But that's another aside story we'll probably get into a little bit later. But I'm hoping that my dear friend Paul from Florida will be calling us later. I think he said he would be checking it out, and I'm certainly hoping that he will, because Paul is basically the co-host of this program at large. He is one of the first people that I considered to be my co-host even before I came to California. Paul and I had met years ago in Asheville, North Carolina. We were working at a grocery store together where Callie and I had met. So Callie's got a big part of this story as well. But Paul was in the meat department, and I was a stock clerk, and Callie worked in the cheese department. We all three had something of a really wonderful working relationship, and we developed a rewarding friendship out of it. Paul got, I don't know if he may have been married at the time, if I'm not mistaken, but he eventually ended up moving on to Florida, and I came here to California, but we always kept each other in our mind's eye, at least at times, and I was thinking of him the other day, and I emailed him, and ironically enough, he called me about 10 minutes after I'd sent that email, and I thought, surely he's responding to my email already. Wow, that's quick. So I was really anxious to hear what he had to say, and I asked him about it, and he didn't know anything about my email. And so I thought about that. I was like, wow, that's amazing that we both have this inclination to get a hold of each other at the times that we do, and this has happened repeatedly in the number of years that we've been away from each other on different sides of the continent. So it's just ironic, I suppose. Some people think it's crazy or strange, peculiar, but as it turns out, it's exactly as it should be. And that's what's so cool about it. And everybody's life, in a sense, is exactly how it's supposed to be, according to certain fundamental rules of the universal order or disorder. We could go on some length about either of those topics, but right now, actually, I'm going to play a song and get some more things together here I want to discuss for today's program. And I do want to remind the listening audience that I have a lot to remind you as far as the Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory Board is concerned. We did have the all-day educational debate and seminars. That was just this Saturday, and I have a lot of information to share with folks, so I'll be back in just a couple of minutes. I hope you stay tuned.
Perfect spiritual mother born fire to the greed of the tree. We move together, blowing like the ocean breeze. Soon them see us all out like Manatee. In this risky world, at the edge of Cali. Use your transcendental senses to see. Activate your guts of chakra from C to B. Reunite your soul with the edge of soul in the tree.
Yeah,
the Keys of Creation from Southern California, actually, but I ran into them actually on the street up here in Northern California. I can only imagine what they were up to. But they have been touring in the area. Unfortunately, I haven't seen or heard of a date in the immediate area. I know that they might even be in Sebastopol tonight. I think that's what Callie was telling me earlier. And unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. I've got kind of a full schedule today myself, but you never know. Hopefully, you'll get out there and see it. And if you don't, maybe you can check out the show tomorrow at the Ukiah Brewing Company. I think it's Rootstock, if I'm not mistaken. And I might be in attendance because it's my birthday tomorrow. I don't normally tell people, but it's a very important birthday for me. It's a milestone of my own personal journey. Of course, 33 is a magical, mystical number, and We've seen lots of sages come and go, and they've all kind of hovered around that particular age as being one of the most important in their metamorphosis, I suppose. So I'm really excited about the changes that I'm about to embark on into my 34th year of existence. I'm on a roll here. I'm really enjoying it now, and I'd like to hang out here for a very, very long time. Hopefully you are on that same mindset, but if you're not, maybe you can be one day. So that is, of course, the hope of every living being, I think, is that we will come to a full, wonderful expression of who we all are, collectively, actually. I was listening to some folks last night on a DVD that Callie had picked up from a friend. I can't remember what it was called. Disinformation, I think. I don't know if any of you have seen that, but it's pretty interesting stuff, some of it. But it basically delved into the whole concept of individual, which we've discussed on this program several times, and we go into the breaking the word down and recognizing the duality of being, as they say, on earth as in heaven, whereas on earth, yeah, as in heaven. But we've kind of lost sight of that spiritual grounding, if you will, and we've been distracted for far too long. At least since the Industrial Revolution has occurred, we've been distracted with technology and the advances of science and religion, or if you could call them advances. I don't actually think of them as much as being advances, but that's another matter. Again, this show, Cannabis Issues, Medical Marijuana Related Items, I did want to bring up the wonderful full-day debate event that happened at Area 101. And we got to thank those folks, Tim Blake and the rest of the crew up there, for pulling these events off with such professionalism. And I think they're quite fluid, as a matter of fact, considering how much we actually have accomplished in these short few hours. From about noon or one-ish until 8, I think, we had our ears filled with opinions and facts and laws and statute numbers, and the list was just longer than I'd ever believed. Actually, we need to have Dr. Bill Courtney here again, because from his most recent slideshow presentation on what had previously been referred to as the endogenous cannabinoid system, will henceforth be referred to as something else. And that something else, I can't quite put my finger on the paperwork that I'd collected from that event that discussed it. But apparently what he was saying, and he'd alluded to this last time, and I don't think that I quite followed where it was going, so it sort of makes sense now that I've seen this revised PowerPoint presentation, which I encourage anyone to get a chance. Anyone who has a chance to see that, I highly encourage that you do so. It's quite highbrow, unfortunately, for a lot of people. The general public can have quite a hard time metabolizing what is being disseminated from Dr. Courtney, because it's a lot of doctor speak. And I've only been able to pick up on a little bit of it because I've delved into that myself from time to time. I know that it is of a particular interest, not just to me, but to a lot of people that I know in the cannabis culture. Obviously, they have a lot of symptoms, and I think that it is important for all of us to sort of be able to heal ourselves and have some sort of participation in the healing of our community and those that surround us. And one of the things that I do remember in my journey was I watched this movie called, what was it, Alonzo's Oil or something like that, maybe. And it had Nick Nolte in it, and he had a son that had this very rare condition that basically ate away, if I'm not mistaken, the coating on the brain cells. And it was that coating on the brain cells, like much like wires on have that rubber coating. If you don't have that, sheath, so to speak, you can short-circuit certain brain cells and you'll have seizures and spasms of all sorts and all types of ailments and dis-ease. And that can lead to chronic pain. And over a lifetime, it really breaks a person's will down. And we need to rehabilitate that in whatever way possible. Anyway, in this movie, I remembered that they were discussing how these chains of enzymes and molecules that are in medicines and how they all work and so on and so forth. And he was piecing them together and he was using paper clips to symbolize these molecular structures. And I found it fairly interesting for some reason. And overall, I think the one thing that I took away with it was this use of the word amyl, A-M-Y-L. And I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it right. But I remember that word being used a lot. And so when I remember, I heard Dr. Courtney bringing it up again, it dawned on me, a little light went off, and I was thinking, wow, where have I heard this word before? It took me a second or two. But, you know, I consume quite a large amount of cannabis, and fortunately for me, my memory works. And I remember him using that phrase, and then it pieced together in my mind that maybe a lot of other diseases are symptoms of the same problem. And the more I looked into this issue of nutrition and the regeneration of brain cells and other cells that have different varied rates of, they have varied lifespans. You know, each one of them has a... Okay, one moment. Broadcast station. Wow, that was quick. Receiving. If anybody out there heard that on the air, could you please let me know at the station, because an emergency alert system came in, and I'm wondering if it's going out on the air. So bear with me. I'm actually going to play a song if it's not, and I'm going to check this out. So I'll be back in a minute. From the reach of the tyrants, I'm bubbling like clouds, defying self, I come with the light. All along the way, turning to a prey, it was a mark of his sin. Last time on a comfy play, I was just sick. Vigilancy and your fighting and fear was every decay. Praises to his majesty, most honorable I life's lasty. Conquer the enemy, step as equanimity, that's what chap victory. Transdenominational restoration, movement of humanity. Dignity and all manners of fecundity. Rise free the people over Elan Valley. Rise to free the people in Tonga country. Tonga country, mind alone, make one bond of free. Mind alone, make one bond of free. Demonstrate the people with some vanity. Chase the root of the dot, all that you got. Chase the root of the dot, that's all you got. New them far. Rest the far, I need the way. Rest the far, I need the way. All along the way. Rest the far, I chant.
Rastafari chant victory. All along the way. Rastafari chant victory.
Okay, and we are back, and that was Keys of Creation again. That first song was Age of Kali, and the second one was Alliance. So, and I was trying to finish up a little bit of what I was saying before the emergency alert came in, and I've logged it. So if you're wondering, FCC, I've logged it. It's been done. So I was talking about some of the health advantages of not just the cannabinoids that are in the resinous portions of the cannabis plant, but the nutritional portions of the hemp seed itself play a very crucial role in the engendering of the new brain cell growth. And not just brain cells, but all cells. They need the certain proteins and these certain oils and enzymes and micro elements, micronutrients, if you will, that can facilitate the exchange of the old material and allow for that new growth to come into play. And what Dr. Courtney was telling us at this slideshow presentation is effectively something I alluded to earlier was actually about cancer. It seems that our cells, in particular the cancer cells, are always on. They're continually growing, and you can't shut them off. And that's the problem, is that they just grow in an ununiform fashion that disrupts the growth of the other ones near them. And this causes a lot of problems. But it seems like it's a good thing gone awry. Here you have skin cell growth, or whatever cell growth, that wants to continue. That's an interesting thing there. Most cells want to die off, and it's kind of like trying to regulate this process. Apparently, we are continuously bombarded with the inevitability of potential cancer. Our bodies are effectively, our immune system is continuously combating this issue. And we have to fuel our bodies with the proteins and the enzymes and the essential fatty acids and oils that our body desires in order to facilitate this immune system response. And only cannabis has all that the body requires in one efficient, economical food source. And since I'm bringing it up into an interesting segue, I've got to plug the product Hempini. I don't know if any of you caught the letter to the editor that I had submitted weeks before, actually the week before Columbus Day, but it was finally published October 20th. Thank you, Casey Meadows at the Ukiah Daily Journal. I finally put a bug in her ear, and it was published the next day. And it articulated how much an advantage it would be for our community to learn more about the nutritional aspects of Hempini, which is available at the Ukiah Natural Foods Co-op down on State Street. I highly encourage you to check it out there. It is in the refrigerated section above the orange juice. So if you're interested, you can probably find more about it online. If you just type in Hempini, that's Hempini. And that is a product that is distributed from Santa Cruz, but it is imported from Canada, although we would be at a great advantage if we would be producing it locally and distributing it locally. And that way we wouldn't have to depend on outside sources for our nutrition. That would make us more interdependent with our environment. I'm actually going to come back to a discussion I started the program with earlier, and if I can get this to work properly, I'm going to introduce my friend Paul from Florida. If you are on the line, I'm wondering if you can hear me. Paul? Are you there? Paul? He might not be there. Hold on a second.
Paul?
Yes, sir?
Can you hear me?
Can hear you.
You can hear me now, but you can't hear me when I was talking to you a minute ago?
No.
Okay. Let me try something here. See if I can get it to work. Hold on.
Alright.
Are you there, Paul? For some reason he's not coming in. Paul? That doesn't work. Paul, are you there? Paul?
Yes.
You are there? Okay, I can hear you finally. I'm sorry that you can't hear me very well. Is it coming in any better? How about now?
A little bit better.
A little bit better, okay. Well, unfortunately, I don't know if I can do much better than that.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll try not to breathe while I while I listen.
Okay, I think I can manage that. So, Paul, you're in Florida. What part of Florida are you in?
I am in Riviera Beach.
Riviera Beach, and I was telling the listening audience earlier that you and I met in Asheville, North Carolina, where we were working at a Green Life grocery store.
Yes.
And I've told the listening audience repeatedly that I've always considered you to be my co-host at large. But I've anxiously awaited the opportunity to have you on this program. So I thank you for finally making an appearance.
Yes, much too long.
One of the main reasons that I wanted to do this program was to effectively build a bridge between the us and them that effectively does exist almost everywhere you go.
Sure.
In every community. But the main one that I noticed was one that I myself agitated quite often was the, I suppose you could call it the liberal end and the conservative end, but it's more what I realized is this culture of cannabis and the culture of contemporary Christianity.
Mm.
I thought that there was so much disparity between the two sides, but there was so much more in common than they than either one wanted to admit to.
Mm.
And I come from a more secular background where I was definitely immersed in the cannabis culture.
Mm.
Although I did have some upbringing in the culture of contemporary Christian churches, and I've been raised in Catholic churches, I've been raised in Methodist churches and Baptist churches and the churches of the Nazarene, and I've studied in the Mormonism, and that got me interested in other religions as well. But a lot of people that are in contemporary Christianity kind of stay homogenized in that culture without actually delving into the, I guess, a more historical context of what Christianity came from.
Mm.
And I think that's why I wanted you to be a part of this program, because you have a very good understanding of the contemporary Christian movement as it is today. And I think that you have within you that wherewithal that I think Christ had, that said, you know, whoever does as I've done is my brother. And it didn't matter which religion you called it, as long as it achieved the same goal. And that's what, you know, you and I were discussing this a little bit last night. You can talk all you want about particular scriptures.
Sure.
Until you're blue in the face. But if you don't really get to a point and a solid message that people can take with them, you know, and not have to carry it in a book, not have to carry it on a DVD or anything else. They can carry it as an expression of who they are.
Sure. I think also, too, you have contemporary Christianity and I think contemporary church life, and I think more one really explores the words of Jesus and not so much the words of church life, they can truly begin to hear exactly what it is Jesus spoke about, and it becomes a little less dogmatic than your typical church, and I think that would open more Christians up to, like I always say, being able to even dialogue with people if they truly look at the words of Christ and not the words of solely their pastor.
Yeah, because you know, when you and I were in North Carolina, there was a lot of pastors in that particular area. In fact, you may have had an occasion to visit what we referred to as Preacher Park. It was actually Pritchard Park, where they had the drum circles on Friday nights. But on Sundays, usually Saturdays as well, there would be several supposed ministers from various congregations. Actually, one of them that I'd mentioned earlier, I noted that Tom Robbins was from Burnsville. And I met a guy from Burnsville who claimed to be a minister from a Baptist church there. And this is the guy that I'd mentioned actually trying to light me on fire, because he thought that I was condemned to burn in hell for eternity for all of my transgressions that I've already committed, and that I apparently, in his mind, was unworthy of salvation and redemption and so on and so forth. And he actually asked the guy next to him for a lighter. And I was appalled, but just as amazed and astonished that the guy actually handed him a lighter. And then the supposed preacher tried to light my hand that I had extended to him earlier to try to shake it. He tried to light my hand on fire. Because he thought, you know, well, I've heard this over and over again, that, you know, those that have committed all these sins and so on and so forth, they're unworthy. It's just like witch hunts all over again. We haven't really escaped.
So is there any way to turn this up just a smidgen?
I wish that there were. I can try. Is that any better?
You, as we go along.
Yeah. I wish that there was. It doesn't come out any better.
It's like it got quieter.
Sorry. Any better?
We need that. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you better now.
You can?
Yes.
Oh, how about that?
Not the greatest, but it is definitely better than not.
Well, there are all these buttons here, and I'm not really all that comfortable moving them around. Like, that's one of the disadvantages to this community radio station, I guess, so far, is that we don't have the ability to hire an engineer or a production assistant to really facilitate the engineering department. I've got to do it all. And it's not really my specialty, unfortunately. So if there's anybody out there in the listening audience that would like to participate in community radio at this level, we sure could benefit from it. Not just myself personally, but I think as the community as a whole would really benefit from us being able to produce a much more professional show. And I think that the more cooperation we have with other people, the more likely we are to be able to do that. That's the thing. It's like the reference to the anointing oil that I keep bringing up. Granted, it's made up of several particular constituent parts, and each and every one of them are great in and of themselves. But if you notice, when blended together under certain parameters, maybe to include the blending of these ingredients in combination with heat and time, and these sorts of things, they become better collectively than they were individually being apart from each other. And that's kind of how we are as a community. We could definitely benefit each other if we cooperated rather than competed. And that's one of the things that I've noticed with not just Christianity, but a lot of other fundamentalist religious ideas, is that it's a competition. You have this, there are those who are going to be granted salvation, and there are those who are going to be condemned for eternity. And you're either one or the other. And that is that maintains that us versus them state that we sort of are tied up into. It's a dual nature that isn't real. We all are each other, and there isn't this need to fear, I guess, what comes after this life, because we're supposed to be really embellishing what we do with this one. You know, that's what supposedly Jesus came to bring us, a life more abundant. Is that a mistake or not?
Well, you had even earlier mentioned the Lord's Prayer on earth as it is in heaven.
Hmm.
And interestingly enough, you know, we ask for forgiveness as we forgive the debt of others. So I always have an issue with very rigid, conservative fundamentalists that want the heaven on earth, yet can't get past the forgiving others of their debt. And it's interesting that you brought that up earlier, because it really, how great would it be on earth if we all did forgive one another for whatever one thought, said, believed, disbelieved, liked, disliked. How many times do people say, oh, did you see that movie? And someone says, oh, I hate it. And they're like, really? Did you see it? And they're like, no, but I just hate it. It's like, wow, you know, did you take the opportunity to actually watch the movie? Because I did, and it was actually pretty good. And I think that the more Christians, as well as the other side, I guess, if you want to call it different sides, the more we try to bridge and to dialogue with one another, again, like you had indicated, Ukiah, we definitely see more similarities than we do differences. And like we spoke about the other day, I think that comes just down to our humanness, that we're humans first. And that's a pretty common bond that we all have.
This common bond that we've had with the people that have come before, and that we're hoping to impart some wisdom to into the future, I think that it is, you know, I think that's our obligation, not just because everybody's telling us to. I think that's something that we can recognize on our own as being a necessity at this point. I'm, you know, you were telling me a little bit about some of your studies in the Nag Hammadi Library. Is that right?
Yes.
And you were noticing some of the parallels, some references to cannabis that you personally had discovered without, you know, anybody forcing this on you. You've just noticed some of the similarities on your own?
There is. There are several references, you know, in the Bible that we do have that I was kind of, I guess, comparing. Lately I've been on a exhaustive study of the Nag Hammadi Library, more on the topic of subversive speech and kind of looking at parables and really asking the question why Jesus even chose to speak in parables. Why didn't he just come out and say it? But within that, there are various areas in the Gnostic writings that others have alluded to. I can't take credit for them, but I've noted them, and you know, you can't dismiss the facts. So I think that's something for contemporary Christians, that they have to deal with this, that it is in there. It's in the scriptures, what they would call the canonical, the Holy Bible, I guess. The Nag Hammadi Library would be way outside for them to probably even look at. But there's, you know, the same type of reference in there. And, you know, the Gospel of Philip has some mentions of anointing, and can look through some notes here, but there's a few, and I don't know if you've gotten a chance to read Nakamadi, but it's interesting work. I particularly am an advocate for them because they get such a they're so labeled as heretical documents, even calling them Gnostic, which to me I think that label has encompassed those writings and basically discarded them, and I think there's a lot of interesting information for study that people ignore.
Let me ask you a question. I've been to several churches, and I've gone to lots of their Bible study programs, and it seems that they...
I'm missing you here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not hearing you. We need to turn it up again.
Can you hear me now?
Good, a little bit better. There's that one button. When you push it, I'm going to hear you in the clear, and it's going to be great.
I wish. See, I know some of these buttons give it effects that sound like I'm in an echo chamber.
Yeah, you don't want that. You don't want the emergency broadcast one either.
Exactly. I lost my train of thought on that for a second. You know what? I'm going to play a song real quick and see if I can't work this out.
Okay,
hold on.
Sounds like a great idea.
mama, you need
nice.
So, actually, you're coming in loud and clear now.
Great.
At least I think you are. Hopefully the listening audience can hear you.
Uh-oh. Now what happened?
What?
Oh, okay. You were there and then, I don't know if something happened.
You can hear me, though, can't you?
It's coming in and out.
Okay. That's strange.
actually means. But that's and I have to give credit to it, Dr. Goodman out of Gardner Webb University, who first, he has pioneered the study for me, the professors that I had.
You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about recently on the matter of church and state, and you present a very interesting scenario. I didn't really think of it as, his use of parables as a matter of necessity, the way that you're explaining it. But I think that you are right, because ultimately that is what they persecuted him for, was being subversive effectively to the authorities. The claim of kingship was very important. You can't have two kings in the same kingdom, so to speak, and if he's going to sit there and claim to be a king, and then of course Pilate brings him out and he's like, well, this obviously isn't what they're thinking it is. But one of the interesting things I noticed in the Bible in my studies, I don't know the exact passage, but maybe you do. Maybe not. But I think that there is a passage effectively that authorizes the government to do this work on behalf of the divine being that started it all, if you will. But it says that effectively that the government has been put into charge of you, and you should submit to them because they know what they're doing and they have your best interest in mind.
Sure.
And
you're probably alluding to Paul's letters, which bring up the exact scripture reference to Paul. A lot of temperance scholars more on the liberal end have an issue with that, saying that is an early manifestation of the church, and not necessarily historical words of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of scholars, particularly involved with historical questions of Jesus, really try to differentiate between the actual words of Jesus and that of the actual early church, which would be more of a government later rather than the words of Jesus. And that is something that once you start to interpret the gospel with Jesus sort of being a teacher of the oppressed and uttering parables while under oppression, hear the things that he's saying, it gives you a whole different glimpse on his ministry and his purpose. And it's really, when you compare it to church today, definitely makes a difference. And hopefully for those that interpret the gospel that way, you see a difference in them as well.
So how do you recommend that folks get that? There's a lot of information that you know about, I know about, because we've investigated the matter. We have a keen interest in the subject. But I don't think that's so true of every person on the street, the common man on the street, and woman, of course, children, elderly, whatever. But they are often too distracted to recognize the importance of this information that you've been able to uncover. But it's very important and crucial to their development, their spiritual development. And they need that information, but they're not necessarily going to be able to do the dance to get that information. And so I think it is incumbent upon those that have investigated it to disseminate it as readily as possible, I suppose. And I don't see that happening enough in enough places, at all. And I was wondering, do you see that happening where you're from?
I don't.
been discussing a lot of the symbiotic relationship between a lot of contemporary Christianity and the cannabis culture itself. There's so much happening in today's cannabis culture that was happening in the culture of Jesus at the time that he supposedly walked. And I think that we need to look back at that and get more into it. But I think that people far, you know, by and large, are kind of jaded towards words and stories, and they've lost their meaning, and we've become desensitized to them. And I think that's one of the things that has caused a lack of interest in really delving further into the word, and into the words themselves, and not just the words, but the letters, and the spaces between, and the punctuation, and all of these nuances to language that we have failed to recognize are equally important. And the references I'm talking about are one in particular that Jack Harrod alluded to me a while back was that many years ago the origins of the Hebrew language. Hebrew wasn't originally a written language; it was an oral language, and it didn't have it didn't have the vowels that it contains today, or that it evolved through with the Aramaic language, a kind of a sister language between Greek and Hebrew. And people don't recognize that the message in that language has meaning that we can't quite grasp when reading a King James version of the Bible. And you know that. And I know that, and there are lots of people that are just scratching the surface of this awareness. And like you're saying, if we go back and look at his words, not a lot of the other words that have been attributed to him, but are more than likely not his. In particular, I remember a few years ago, living in Asheville, which has a very large gay and lesbian population, a friend of mine said, she found this book, and it was about, it was this huge book, it was bigger than a Bible, and it was titled, All of the Passages of Jesus That Condemn Homosexual Behavior. And I was like, really? I didn't know there were any passages in particular. And she says, well, actually, that's the catch. You open up the book, and it's blank, because there aren't any. And that's the big mystery to a lot of this book in particular, is these ideas that are attributed to a man that more than likely would just be cringing at the supposition that he said that. And one of the things that I keep bringing up, especially in the cannabis community, is just like, well, cannabis was not outlawed at the time of Christ, and nobody disputes that. And I think, well, if he's the Son of God, don't you suspect he might know a thing or two about this plant? He might have had at least some interest in it. And if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the clothing granted, in the story, Jesus does go through quite an ordeal there at the end, but in today's society, if we can't recognize that the common child in the American streets and in the streets all over the world, in places that don't even have streets, children suffer a great deal more on a regular basis over a longer period of time, and we fail to recognize how important that is to us today. And I'm not trying to take away from the tragedy of anybody's death, in particular this guy named Jesus, but if we're going to sit there and tell ourselves that that's the worst it could be or that's the best it could be, then I think then we've certainly lost sight of what the message actually was.
And I think that bring up a valid point. Look back, again, I start with my parable.
quote from Benjamin Franklin that I'm quite fond of now. A nation of well-informed men and women who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved. It is in that region of ignorance that tyranny begins. And that's what I've been espousing, is that confusion, if anything, is the only weapon of mass destruction that actually exists. And, you know, the more in harmony we are with the message of Mother Nature or God or whatever it is that you would prefer to call it, the more in line we can get with that, the more likely it is to be forgiving of our transgressions against her, him, it, us, which is what it really is. We have this certain obligation to teach people the things that they don't want to know, because that's actually where the salvation is. You can save yourself from being injurious to others through your, I guess, unawares. And that's what I think most people don't recognize, how painful some of the fundamentalist concepts can be, collectively speaking. And we live in this country, although we call it America, I've disaffectionately referred to it as generica, but what I've noticed, especially in light of most of the soldiers that I've known, a lot of the Air Force Academy soldiers come out of this thinking that they're on a mission for God, for Jesus, in fact. And a lot of Marines and Navy people, they're all being baptized. I can't tell you how many shipments of camouflaged Bibles have been sent to the Iraqi region. But this is a holy crusade for our country, and we're letting these people go and do this in our name, in the name of Jesus. It's like, who would Jesus bomb?
Exactly.
We know better. Especially at a place that historically speaking would be his homeland. The people of Iraq and Afghanistan are still today speaking the exact same language that was spoken by this supposed Messiah. And here we are bombing the snot out of the Fertile Crescent, so to speak. And when we do that, we're really bombing ourselves. I mean, when the soldiers come home with the depleted uranium, if they come home at all, you know, they come home to impregnate their innocent, young, ignorant bride, because a lot of these women are just latching on to somebody that may be able to pull them out of the circumstance that they find themselves in. And I can speak from personal experience on this one, you know. I did this, it happened to me. Lots of the people that I've known throughout my life that joined up in the military were just trying to find a way out. And thought of that was the best way. And at 17, you know, I didn't know how to live. I shouldn't be having to be taught how to kill or die. And that's effectively what we are doing. And it's just killing me to find out how many of these kids come from what are supposed to be Christian families. And it's just a tragedy in my mind that they don't have any conflict of interest when they put up their, or when they compare their religion to their nationalism. I just find it amazing. And I'm just wondering, at what point are we, you know, even, I consider myself to be involved in the Christian collective, so to speak, too. And I want to expand yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. John F. Kennedy. And you know, I really appreciate your mentioning the Marriage Act and how Jesus acted in that sense. He was called the husband of the church. And like you said, it's not, the church has neighbors and they are to be loved. And Jesus wanted that love to be expressed as an extension of himself. You know, when he said, "I am the vine and you are the branches." You know, you're the extensions that receive that light and reflect that light and produce the fruit. And like you said, we can each have a bountiful harvest expressing who we are in our own right. And we don't have to do that which has already been done continuously because, you know, it's been done. We can go on to do better things. That greater works than I have done shall you do, he said. And we can achieve that, and we can overcome these obstacles that we put in our place. And like you mentioned, we can put our baggage up on the table and work it out. We all have baggage. We all have something peculiar to offer, but it's something that we can do. This isn't an impossibility. We just have neglected to. And when we stop neglecting to, you'll see that we unlock a lot of opportunities that we have otherwise never even realized were there. And the main one that I'm really focusing on is that peace plan that we really, you know, that it says in the Bible too. I don't like to use it every time, but there will be a time for peace. Well, I think, as many of us do, that time has come. And there's no reason why we can't sustain that indefinitely. Once we get it, and we know we can because we have all the required parts to do that. We have each other. We just haven't had the discussion that will cause this to evolve. But, you know, there are people out there like yourself that are mindful enough to engage that conversation. And as far as I know, that's how it all works. Everything that Jesus did, everything that all the prophets did, it basically revolved around them having a conversation with people. Some of them were people that agreed with him. Most of them weren't. But it seemed everybody thought that they had something to learn. And some of them actually thought that they had something to offer, even if it wasn't, in the same value system as everybody else's, as we noted with the woman who anointed Jesus' feet. She was actually criticized for that initially by the people that surrounded her, and they were like, "Oh my goodness, this is a year's worth of a balm and anointing, and you're going to use it all up right here, right now, on a person you don't even know." Dang straight, she did it, and he appreciated it. As we should all appreciate each other in that sense. We all have an inherent value. We all have something to contribute.
We start to see people with
actually the least you could do if you only let yourself recognize your inherent divinity. And when you come to that subjective mindset that we are all one, and that's how he got people to heal, was to recognize their inherent divinity of themselves through the art of communication, which was facilitated by this anointing or use of incense and parable. Because like you said, it's the education of the person that allows them to be able to use the tools at their disposal rather than having them turn into weapons and be destructive rather than constructive. And on that note, I was trying to explain a little bit more about and that's where we are. We've allowed a sort of fundamentalist idea to exist that has been nothing but destructive. And it's time that we built that bridge that you and I have referred to bring these groups of us on one side and us on the other side. Because it isn't an us versus them, it's us on both sides. It really, really is. And the more that we look at, like you were saying, some of the more true, inspiring messages of Jesus was that we all have that ability. And, you know, you were talking about this paradox that Jesus had with, you know, it seems like, why would they want to kill him? I mean, he's such a good guy. He helped people, including, if I'm not mistaken, the centurion who was charged with the crucifixion. If I'm not mistaken, somewhere earlier in the passages of the Bible, there's a story about Jesus helping a centurion's child or wife. Maybe it was Pontius Pilate's wife, but I think it was a centurion's child that he helped. And I see all of these passages where Jesus says, well, think nothing of it. It's really no big deal. Don't tell anybody. And then everybody was told, you know, and it made a big scene. And in particular with this Lazarus gentleman, I'm not sure. Maybe you could help me out on this story. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. But then once the word got out that Jesus had done that, if I'm not mistaken, I thought the authorities had him killed again.
I'm not sure that's written. I have to ask that. I'm not sure if that's... I haven't heard that.
Well, I'm just trying to remind myself in what was the cause of Lazarus' second death. I mean, everybody else in the Bible seems to have gone through at least one. And, you know, bringing that up, that is another issue that I've always kind of thought of as peculiar, of a contradiction in the Bible. There's this, you know, real insistence by a lot of the contemporary Christians that I've come across, and I don't think that you're one of them, but I think that some of them have...
Not yet,
yeah. A lot of them have tried to tell me that no one else has ever been able to, you know, come back from the dead. But then, well, that's not necessarily true. At least on one occasion, if not two, Jesus had previously raised people from the dead. And he charged all of his disciples to do as he had done, to go out into the community and anoint and heal and do all of these great works. And I don't think he said at any time, do all the things except raise people from the dead. He didn't say, do all the things except heal the blind or the maimed or whatever. He basically gave us the authority to do whatever our minds could come up with, because he knew that that's the reality of it. We can basically achieve that which we conceive. And we need to realize that in new ways, not old ways, because that's already, like I said, it's already been done. We got to come up with something more constructive. Sorry.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying too, and I hear a lot of people say Bible, the biblical contradictions, which a lot of
to the well, when I have attended these particular Bible study classes, it seems that there's an agenda already lined up. You study this passage, you talk about it. You study this passage, you talk about it. And so on and so forth. And I've noticed through the years of my going back and forth to different communities and different churches and different, time frames, I see that there's a lot of similarity in what is asked to be studied. And every time I'm involved in a Bible study, it seems like more often than not, these particular passages are selected because of the confusion that they cause, rather than the harmony that they can create. And that's something I wanted to bring up where you are in your walk with your Christianity. I've mentioned to you before, it's just like your name itself. I used to be very hesitant to engage anybody with that name, just because I suspected that they would bring with them that Pauline baggage.
Yes,
of Christianity.
That
yeah.
That was a great day.
And so to finally meet somebody with that name that isn't the stereotype of Paul that you find in the Bible a lot of times, and I was just so enamored with that in and of itself. It's like, wow, we have somebody who can read the message and get the message and express the message without dilution, in my opinion. And that was a real inspiration, in my opinion, to me and to lots of people, just because that's something that isn't appreciated in a lot of these Bible studies, is that you have somebody like yourself who's willing to think outside of the Bible box. And you can apply the circumstances that you've lived and that you've had people share with you that they've lived, and you can come up with something that's not been in a book before, that hasn't been written up in an essay, or you haven't seen it on TV, and you didn't hear about it on the radio or read it in the paper. This is something completely new. And this is what we need. We need people that have the insight, the intellectual insight that you have, in my opinion, to share with people who are as curious as you and I are, or more so, or even those who are maybe less so, and you can make them more curious for what you're talking about, because it's not dry and bitter the way a lot of Bible study programs are. And that's what I'm saying. I've been to so many of them, and when I get into a Bible study class and I throw in my questions, you know what kind of response I get.
Oh, yeah.
I usually get them, oh, I'm calling the cops. I'm not taking this. You get out of here. And the whole nine yards.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't need to happen. And, you know, even in Asheville, it was like that. I can't tell you how many times I would go into a church and express some curiosities about the Bible that they've never heard of before. And they're very simple. You know, I would just say, hey, what does the term Christ mean?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a simple one. And they would just look at me with these doe eyes and blink and come up with 15 nod answers. And then you finally get down to, you know, it's an anointing. It means the anointed one. What's an anointing? I don't know. Someone who's supposed to be proclaiming that they are a Christian doesn't even know the definition of the word that they're using. It's kind of humbling in a sense, and I think that we need not to attack people for not knowing. We need to have an environment that allows for that exchange, you know, the admission that we didn't know something and the acceptance that we now do. Because when we admit that we're wrong, we become right. And that's just something that we can work with. And I'm hoping that, you know, I can encourage people like yourself to take up that call.
Well, you know, you hit the nail on the head. You know, church, open our doors to Bible study. However, do we truly open the doors to the real questions that are out there, no matter what they are?
Mm.
If someone is assured in their faith, they shouldn't be afraid of questions.
If I say to you tomorrow, take my hand, child, come with me. It's to a castle I will take you. Well, what's to be, they say, will be me.
just came in on the news wire, I guess you could call it. I just got a call from another associate of the Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory Board. I think actually he might be a member. I have to check. He might be one of the advisors as well. Anyway, we probably couldn't have pulled this off without him anyhow. So, one of the things I wanted to mention, though, he called and told me that he is under the belief that Mimo Parker may be out on bail. May have also a new attorney, and things are probably looking much better for him and his brother as well, I suspect. And I wanted to bring up some of the information that I'd found at the advisory board, and if you'd attended, you could have gotten some of this information. A moment ago, I had a document that had been signed off by our district attorney, Norman Broman, and it basically highlighted this. I did find it. This from the Office of the District Attorney, dated August 6, 2002. And, of course, keep in mind that since this has passed, we've done a phenomenal amount of work in the medical marijuana field. So you can just as assuredly know that whatever is stated in this statement, we've kind of evolved from there as far as tolerance towards medical marijuana is concerned. But let me just give you a little bit about what this is. It's from the district attorney's office, and it is to all law enforcement agencies. Again, this is dated August 6, 2002, 4 years ago. The California Supreme Court made the prosecution of marijuana cases extremely difficult in the face of a medicinal claim. The court extended Proposition 215 further by ruling that it not only provides an affirmative defense, but also limit immunity from prosecution. Now, alleged users and caregivers need only to present enough evidence of their patient or caregiver status to raise a reasonable doubt of their guilt. In practice, it means that they do not have to prove much in order to get the benefit of the presumption of legitimacy. Once that threshold is met, the burden shifts to the prosecution to disprove it by using, quote, a beyond a reasonable doubt standard, end quote, which is actually a very high standard of proof. Under this new decision, this office cannot successfully prosecute a marijuana case with a medicinal defense absent overwhelming proof that the claim is false. Given the new state of the law, officers run a significant risk of civil liability for wrongfully destroying someone's quote-unquote medicine. Remember, minimal showing by the alleged offender that he or she qualifies under the Compassionate Use Act, otherwise referred to, or previously referred to as Proposition 215, is enough to tilt the scales against us. Therefore, officers must exercise caution in the field. Officers are advised not to seize or destroy marijuana when the person is claiming to be a patient or caregiver. Officers are likewise urged against making arrests in those situations unless confronted with compelling circumstances. The recommended approach is to photograph the evidence and leave them at the scene. Reports can be submitted to this office for evaluation and screening. Should this office feel that the medicinal claim is false and can be disproved, a search warrant can be obtained at that time for a marijuana seizure. This policy should be followed irrespective of the quantity involved or the dubious nature of the claim. And there you have it. And that is probably the best defense for Mimo Parker is to, and I'm sure he knows this because he's been involved in the city litigation process before, and knowing that, I suspect that he will put up a very good defense. Let's see something. Are you there?
I'm still here.
legitimacy to his situation than had previously been rumored to be. Of course. So I was just going on about Mimo Parker again, if you don't mind, just for a moment. What we were saying is that he does have a medical recommendation, and, well, as most of us are aware, it seems like, well, he had, I don't know, an approximate amount of 200 plants. Granted that he may have only been able to prove that he had his own recommendation, it may have been the only one he had in his pocket at the time of his arrest. And I know full well from being a law enforcement officer in the past that, and having been involved in other matters that have ended up having a police report written up about them, I know firsthand that the actuality of a case and the description of a matter are, in fact, usually two different things. Now, again, it is alleged that Mimo Parker had absolutely no other recommendations other than his own. Of course, that's probably just an allegation made by the police department, which is something I would actually rather expect from them. I'm sure that what they would consider to be extenuating circumstances would be the incessant phone calls that come in all the time about the smell of cannabis being grown in the middle of a community. But one of the things that I want to note about this matter is that chances are, in all of the homes that are probably making these statements against Mimo Parker and the odor of the cannabis in the backyard, chances are there's a lot more criminal activity going on in those homes that is not being disclosed to the general public. And the reason I have this theory, I suppose, is because, cannabis smell doesn't hurt anybody. And that the problem is that in all the numbers of years that he has been a part of this community, I really doubt that he is responsible for a great deal of crime in the community. He seems to have been a rather upstanding member of society. If I'm not mistaken, he had an interest in the cannabis culture itself. He was a regular caller to this program. And although we didn't agree on every particular issue regarding cannabis, we, I think, had something of a mental agreement amongst, we're fellow citizens. That's all we are. We're fellow travelers in the journey of life. And I think that he knows that he can provide medicine whereas other people who are usually ill or injured cannot. And so I actually applaud his efforts, and I wish him the best of success with his case. I hope to hear from him soon. And be that as it may, I'm going to go on with some other information. Talking about... Well, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, I'm going to mention again that on Friday, the October 20th edition of the Ukiah Daily Journal, there was a letter to the editor that I had submitted. It's titled, "Cannabis Has a Long History Here." And I'm not going to read it right now, but I might read it later. But I wanted to get back to my friend Paul. You're still with us?
Still with
me. Yay, thank you. You know, one of the reasons I called you the other day was to encourage this idea that we could work together on this particular project really getting the tread to the road here and making, like what we were talking about, happen, where we educate people in the areas that they need to be educated in. And it's really only a matter of facilitating that dialogue between people. And what I've noticed is that, you know, you can have a conversation with a person, such as you and I are having right now, and we have no idea who is being affected by it, especially in radio, in this particular medium. But in the regular setting on the street, you and I could have this conversation, and it could, you know, be something that you and I carry with us, and we could affect, you know, another person tomorrow. healthcare system, one of the things that I've noticed was that long before that ever took root, the church facilitated all of those needs of the community. And I think that we've kind of lost that sense, and I would like to reintegrate that back into this community. I've noticed, like, when I was at the Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory Board's debate the other day, a woman came up and approached the owner of Urban Legend out of Fort Bragg, Paula Dieter, who is also a co-moderator on the debate. She was approached, I think, by a physician, actually, who has seen a lot of the patients that eventually signed up to the Hemp Plus ministry down on State Street that Les and I and a couple of other folks had tried to provide medicine to the needy, the most needy, actually. And we did that for the time that we could, and that's been lost since the tragic loss of Les Train. But we go on, and we want to prepare a way to reintegrate those patients that have been displaced by that occurrence. And, you know, there were at least 600 to 1,000 of those patients by then, and I would suspect that there could be a lot more if they felt that it was an inviting atmosphere, that it was going to actually accomplish the goals that it had set out for itself that, you know, we've discussed here. And I think that's the number one reason why I've been approached so often about this issue, from, you know, the doctors in the area to the people who are in favor of the legalization of cannabis or the re-legalization of cannabis, whether it be for industrial, nutritional, or medical. And so it's like we have the perfect environment for it. We just need to put the right people in the right places to make it a reality that we can be proud of, I think. And that's what I think the community deserves. And I think that we can deliver it, but I think that that we need to be very mindful of the participants. That's really what it comes down to. I think that it's really got to do with the application of humility. That seems to be the word of the week. And you have that. And that's one of the reasons why I've, you know, made this offer to you. And I can't think of too many other people that I really am for certain I would want to be involved in this particular project. So keep that in mind and think it over very seriously.
Freedom and being able to speak
connection there. It's like the for use of a better word or a phrase, country dumb variety of what you're saying is that you can see the common sense contradiction of this Bible. Here you have a guy that's going to kill his own son. That's fine, but pot's not. And you can explain that. That doesn't take a lot of scholarly work to figure it out. And I think that right there just shows me, though, that as much study as you can do, you can break it down to a layman's term, you know, or a way of understanding that. And that's exactly what we need. We need somebody that can talk the talk to, you know, on the linguistic side of really delving into the meaning of the words and so on and so forth, but being able to bring it back to somebody who doesn't understand those big $20 words,
sure,
and explain it to them in a way that we can relate to.
Sure.
And one of the things that I noted when you were talking about it, and I've brought it up here before too, is this. The idea of a communal supper, breakfast, or sharing of the sacrament, which is when Jesus, went through the atonement, the transubstantiation of the sacrament into his body, he became one with it. And that's why I've got this song, I sort of lined up, Jesus was a mushroom. But when he spoke of, you know, this is my flesh, do this in remembrance of me, it was a way of resurrecting. That's what the word remember often referred to, is you are Jesus when you do that which he has done. And if you step into those shoes or those sandals, if you will, or into that robe, and you participate in that communal sacrament, and you do it in a fashion that is indicative of a truer understanding of what that means. And you can see that if you have a varied congregation. If you have, like you were saying, if you have a bunch of people that are going to agree with you, what good does it do? Does it do any of us? You know, you're preaching to the choir again, and we need to really delve out and bring more people into this collective of us. And like you say, we refer to it each other. You know, you're on the Florida coast, I'm on the California coast, and we have sort of two different cultures, but we do have the same culture. And we, you and I, can, you know, see how each of us has a role in being able to facilitate that conversation from each other's angle. You know, I'm more of a cannabis orientation and you're more of a Christian orientation, but we both recognize the importance of stepping outside of that label and that stereotype and seeing something more important and being able to bridge that gap. And I thank you for being a part of the show today and explaining this in your words. And it really, I think, helps the conversation and it helps me be able to formulate ideas that I think will be of use in this community. You know, I hope that we will be able to have a table that is much like a round table. And this is the reason I figured something out about this round table, and you brought it up when you mentioned the classrooms. When we set up in a classroom, it's like we're conditioning ourselves for a particular hierarchy. You know, you have the teacher at the beginning, at the head of the class, and you have, you know, usually what are referred to as the nerds and the teacher's pets and so on and so forth up front, and those that really want to be seen and they want to hear and they want to pay attention, and that's great. Then you have the slackers that usually kind of kick it in the back and try to get away with stuff, or maybe they can't even read and don't even know that they can't, like myself. When I was young, I didn't know that there was writing on the chalkboard. I didn't see it there. And it was only after I had picked up a girl's glasses and put them on that I discovered that I had a vision problem. But this is indicative of a lot of circumstances that I bet hundreds, if not thousands, and hundreds of thousands of children go through on a regular basis. And we never really evolve past that adolescence. You know, we age, but we don't grow up. And that's a problem. We have a lot of people who act like kids, and that's something else that was alluded to on the DVD that I watched last night. The gentleman was basically saying, in no uncertain terms, none of us are in adulthood. You can't find on this planet somebody who you could conclusively say acts like an adult, you know, an evolved. being with discipline and integrity and the whole nine yards, and has been for an umpteen number of years. And the reason that we can basically conclude that is if we were living up to our complete potential, we wouldn't have these problems that we see surrounding us on a daily basis. That's the purest indication that there isn't a consensus of enlightenment in this day and age. We are still effectively in the dark ages. There are several points of light. There's no doubt about that. You know, Sid Cooperrider, Simca Leha, you know, there's lots of people that are aware and awake and are showing the light to other people. And others are taking that call seriously. And thankfully that they are. Would you like to add anything to that, Paul?
I hear you, and I think the main thing too is that people have taken
that impression that no one's in front of anybody and no one's behind anybody.
Yeah.
We're all beside each other. We're all looking each other in the eye. And we don't have to feel like any of us are leading and any of us are following.
Yeah.
In that sense.
We're on either side.
Yes, exactly. And we can, you know, pass the peace pipe around or what have you and come into a greater conversation that will involve us all and evolve us all through that conversation. And I think that what you were saying is that we have an ability, and I think we have the opportunity, and I think this might be that right time, finally, to preach that prophetic message, because I think it's finally ready to be received in this sense. I think that the time is now, and I'm encouraged by the opportunity to embrace whatever tribulations may come from this action. And like, you know, we've all said it 1,000 times, everything that is worth having has been difficult to achieve, and we're not going to make that our standard to progress, but we recognize the reality of every situation. You know, we go forward regardless of whether or not others are going to try to impede that true progress that you were talking about. We can make this a reality. We don't need to depend on some guy falling out of the sky with, you know, a message from a long, long time ago. Although those are useful, we need to take what we can, learn from the mistakes of others, and learn from the solutions of others, more importantly, and apply them. And I really appreciate you bringing up the what I usually refer to as the one commandment, but you've broken it down to two, which is, you know, love God, love your neighbor. I basically say love it all. Love everything, because everything is that divine spark. You know, we are in the middle of an omnipresent being. There is no duality to that. That which came first, that's it. If you're first, chances are you're the most, you're the best, and you're going to be last. And that which came at that time still exists, and we need to harmonize with that divinity that does surround us. And it's really a tragedy that we live in heaven, but we treat it like hell, and we call it earth.
Yeah, I love that. That's a good line.
I just came up with that. I don't know how that, you know, that's, again, that's, I'm just a vessel for the message. And that's all I can be. I want everybody else's experience to be as wonderful as it can be, regardless of whether or not, you know, I have to take a couple of shots for being on the line and being a liaison, if you will, between these communities and between these cultures.
Yeah. And I think that the word, I'm trying to find the reference, but it's that to the lines of no one that puts his hand to the plow looks back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, there is time and to really, you know, put our hands to the plow and just do it. And
that's the whole concept of husbandry and all the garden, and that's something that, you know, Jesus he prayed in the garden, and that's where one of his most profound revelations came to him is in the understanding that he's got to do what he's got to do, and you know, there are going to be consequences, but it will ultimately have a more profound effect. And I'm not encouraging, honestly, that people think to lay down your life is the ultimate a testament to your faith. I think that it is more of a testament to our faith if we retain and maintain our lives and not put them down, but pick them up and go forward with them and bring others with us into that mindset. And I think, like, you know, there's that another story, a parable, a phrase, whatever, that people refer to in heaven, that we have to feed each other because our elbows don't bend or whatever, and so we can't reach our own mouth, so we have to extend the food to our fellow humans. And I think that that's kind of the concept that's really solidified by that whole concept of the Last Supper. But I'm thinking of more of a first breakfast type of thing, you know, where we're past the morning phase. We're beyond that. We're ready to eat the meal, the sacred meal, together, like a potluck, pun intended. And then we can get on with the work. And the work at hand, the great work, if you will, is to be in recreation. And I mean the recreation in the most divine spiritual sense. We need to recreate that spiritual awareness that existed, that spiritual harmony that existed in the garden before the confusion set in, when we were walking in unity with that divine essence that we actually still are today. We've just overlooked that. We've forgotten that we are divine. It's the doing that has been difficult to this point, and still is to this day. But you know, there are people out there that are focused on the problem and are implementing solutions that work. Yeah. And that's what's so important about, you know, this conversation. And so one of the things I want to talk about, I guess, before we wrap this up, we've only got a few more minutes, but this conversation, you know, I'm sitting here in a booth in California in a relatively obscure place. Nobody's really thinking about it much. And honestly, I don't have a lot of listenership because our footprint, radio footprint, isn't that large. It only goes to the surrounding valley area. But we are on the internet, and you are in Florida, and you're able to pick up this show there. And it is extended worldwide through the internet. But this conversation effectively has happened from one side of the country to the other. Between you and I, this conversation is being transmitted throughout the entire world. Now, granted, it's not being broadcast on the airwaves. But if we think about the quantum physics of it all, I don't know if you've been investigating any of that, but a lot of the contemporary science suggests that the more that we involve ourselves into the equation of scientific discovery, the more we recognize that we have something to do with the outcomes, whether or not we had previously supposed that or not. And what it boils down to is every experiment, whether or not you watch it or not, it may have a different outcome because of our participation. And I think that because you and I have had this conversation today for at least 2 hours, and it effectively has, you know, encapsulated the entire country. You're in Florida, I'm here. We know that we are trying to bridge two cultures to recognize their own similarity so that they become that one culture that we actually are. And in some sense, I think that we've probably done a great deal of work today. Even though it's just been a conversation between two people, there's no telling what kind of outcome this may have. And so I wanted to thank you again for participating in this conversation, and I hope to hear you call up here again and again. So please, feel free to do that more. play a song and sign off here. This has been Joint Adventure today. And you are listening to KMEC 105.1 LPFM, centrally located in downtown Ukiah, the mezzanine of the Mendocino Environmental Center, live and streaming on the web at www.kmecradio.org. Our studio line, area code 707-468-9800, and our office line, as usual, is area code 707-468-9801. Again, my name is Ukiah Sativa Morrison, host of this program, Joint Venture, from 9 a.m. until high noon every Thursday. I'm also in the studio on Mondays, usually from the same time, 9 a.m. until about noon, doing hypothetical radio, world news, civic events, and so on and so forth, so please stay tuned for that as well. Kelly, thank you for being here. You want to say goodbye to Paul? Yeah, you can hang up.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
It's great.
We'd love to have you out here. I'll call you back later this afternoon.
Okay, definitely.
At least to come visit.
Yeah, you gotta come visit.
Definitely. That was invigorating. That was beautiful.
Absolutely.
I've got tears. I need the recording.
Okay. I'm gonna find out if I recorded it or not here in a minute. Thank you. I'll call you later.
Give me a call.
Love you, brother. Be well.
All right. Love you, too.
Bye.
And there you have it. That was finally, this show was done a lot more to my liking. I really, really appreciate the way that was handled. And on that note, I guess I'll have to sign off here. Get Democracy Now! For everybody, because I know that everybody is waiting. And I want to mention before I do that today's edition of Democracy Now! Is being underwritten by Local Flavor Bakehouse. And it is now high noon. My name is Ukiah Sativa Morrison, host of this program, Joint Venture. And get that guy going here. Trying to download.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
They're all the same. They're all financed by the North Americans. They're all backed by the capitalist media, who accumulate their capital through savage capitalism.
Nicaraguan presidential frontrunner Daniel Ortega. The Bush administration's openly opposed the Sandinista leader's candidacy.